Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cube. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God in heaven, right now we come in the name of Jesus Christ. We come with ambition to do what is a good thing. But good intentions don't get us into heaven. So we come with an intention to do a good thing and work toward each other, so that maybe we can be approved by you. We're grateful for the time and the energy that you have provided us with. Everybody has that. And so, with the one that I have and the one that we have, we all say thank you and work toward a common goal, which is humility and living together on this rock. Thanks for your time and your energy, God. In Jesus Christ's name, amen. Father God of heaven, is an awesome God, isn't he? I come right now with an intent to do good, is what I said. And so I'm going to speak to my listeners. Is anybody out there listening? How you guys doing? This is Rashad Anthony Dickerson of the Street View Podcast, also of the Dallas Homeless Engagement Initiative here at the Public Library. Not just the Public Library, the Dallas Public Library. I have several friends in the studio. We start this like every single week we do this. I have new faces, beautiful faces, strange faces. I got a lot of people in the studio today, man, and I'm grateful. I want to shout out all the photographers that's up in here. How you guys doing? Hi. Hello. Can I get the names of my photographers? Can people just step up to the mics wherever they are and say who they are and who they represent?
Sherry Long, I'm here with Willie Baronet.
Okay.
Misty Mayberry, I'm a librarian with Dallas Public Library.
Okay, Dallas Public Library in the building, Miss Sherry Long. Thank you guys for coming out. Also, so on the show, as you heard, I have Willie Baronet. I don't know if too many people know, but Willie Baronet is probably one of the most special people that I have the pleasure of ever reading about, and I'm going to get to know that guy today. Also on the show, I have Mr. Charles. Charles, will you give your whole name?
My full name is Charles Edward William. Willie, that's William with no S. Okay. And my stage name, artist name is Facial.
Facial. I don't know if you've seen some of his artwork, but here at the library, also in the Presbyterian Church, also in the Dallas Stewpot Art Program, Charles has displayed a lot of artwork around Dallas. I've been arbitrary places and seen the word facial. Also, I have the one and only Miss Ann Beaver. Miss Ann, how you doing today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Captain, I can't do it without you, Captain. I don't have the power.
Okay,
Stat. Okay, so right before I get into the show, man, I just kind of want to talk about some different things that's going on in the homeless community that I've noticed, that I've heard, that are different, and we'll lead right into interviewing Mr. Baronet. Mr. Willie. I say Mr. because that's just how it's trained. Over at the bridge, I've noticed that not only have they swapped the back door to the highway, now I heard the curfew was 6 o'clock. And when they did that, when they did the back door to the other side, I noticed so many different activities, like the cars running down. I don't know what street that is. There's a street that's right off the highway that cars run down really, really fast, and it's right in front of the homeless shelter. So there's a danger there that's implemented with that. So let's talk about homelessness, and let's talk about how those things or how the homeless are affected by some of our everyday decisions. I myself had to recently deal with apartment and complexes and moving and things of that nature. Yes, the homeless man that you guys have known on these airwaves now has a place, an apartment, and I dealt with that just yesterday. But there are individuals who are not so fortunate as I am, and they're being stepped on. And part of my job as just being an activist, an artivist, is speaking out for those who cannot speak for themselves. And that's just part of somebody being human. That's part of humility. And so in accord with that, I have a SMU professor here who can probably give a little bit more background, or not even background, but more structure to what I mean by being caring, considerate, and using humility as a way to speak for somebody who needs help. So, Mr. Baronet, is there anything you want to tell the listeners, first off?
Well, first I want to say I'm honored to be here with you, and I appreciate what you're doing. Charles, I'm also a big fan of the Stew Pots art program, so it's good to see you. And thank you for asking me. I really want to echo some of what you said. A lot of the reason that I've been doing this project, which I know we'll talk a little more about, has been really how to deal with my own feelings about how to connect with somebody on the street and to see the humanity in them, let them see the humanity in me. I like this word you coined, artivist. I may have to borrow that, but that's a really, really cool word. And art has the power to touch people in lots of different ways, whether it's spoken word, whether it's visual, whether it's music, performance, whatever. I really am a big believer in that. So you use the word humility. Another thing I want to say is I sometimes use the phrase creating space. And a lot of times when I'm starting a conversation with somebody, when I'm, let's say I'm about to buy their homeless sign, I want to create some safe space for them to trust me and to have a conversation. And that's not something that automatically happens. I really do believe that's something humans create for each other. And part of that's just about listening, and other parts of it, it's really just about holding myself in a way that lets them know I really want to hear them and that I really want to honor the space we have together.
Creating space. I like that. So let's talk about the project.
Okay. So for 21 years, I've been buying and collecting homeless signs. 1993 was the first year when that all began, and I've been doing it ever since. I went back to grad school fairly recently, from 2008 to 2011, and it was during those 3 years that I started to really figure out what I wanted to do artistically with the signs, and that led to a number of shows, a number of installations, and a lot of times it's really just about staying out of the way and displaying the signs so that other people can experience these signs.
Wait. Signs? What do you mean signs?
The cardboard signs that say homeless need help.
Homeless need help? Those signs? Like the guy that's on the side of the road saying, I lost my kid, I'm a vet. And you buy those signs from people?
For 21 years, I've been buying those signs.
And you do art galleries with these signs?
I have been in art galleries. I've done installations where I have covered walls with the signs. I have suspended those signs from the ceiling using fishing line and allow people to walk among them.
Right.
I've put them on floors. I've put them in all kinds of places.
Wait a minute. Hold on. So what you're telling me is the guy that's standing on the side of the highway,
right,
is standing there, and you drive up.
And I say, hey, man, can I buy your sign?
Wait. What?
Exactly.
And you've been doing this for 21 years?
Yeah, I've done it almost 1,000 times.
And get me crayons immediately. No.
Cardboard too.
So, I mean, what do you pay for this? Like,
I don't know exactly what the average price per sign is, but I think that it's probably around $12-13 per sign. It's probably the average.
Oh, that's pretty nice. That is nice. So when did you start doing this?
1993.
And why do you do this?
Why do I do this? I'm not sure. I am completely sure of the total answer to that yet myself. I think part of it is that this really was a way for me to change the dynamic between myself and the person on the street. It really gave me a way to engage with them and connect. And, you know, a lot of them have an art background. A lot of them are very interested in the project and want to talk about art. And a lot of them want to talk about their own art. So it was a way for me to sort of change the dynamic. I think now I am continuing to do this because I also realize it has the potential to help other people to slow down a little bit and realize these people on the streets are just like them. They're just like me. We're all the same.
I agree, man. As an individual who overbooks and triple books himself in all kinds of ways, I do need to slow down, bro. And so one of the things that I really developed coming straight out of the prison system was the time that I had, how free I was when I had not much to do. Now I'm obligated with responsibilities to do things. And so now I never really have that same prayer time, that same, you know, reading of a book. You don't have that time. And so individuals do miss that and they crave that. But to stop and look at a sign. So let me ask you something. You came across a lot of signs then. What's the most crazy sign you've ever seen?
What's the rating of this program? Are we R-rated? Are we PG-13?
Wait. No. Ryan?
He's the host.
Ryan, we do not... The views do not reflect the Dallas Public Library or
yes,
the people.
Exactly. We do have a disclaimer at the beginning.
Well, the only reason I asked that, probably the craziest sign is one that a friend of mine sent me from San Francisco that says, "Vibrator out of batteries, urgent. Please help." That one got Ann.
That one got Ann. Like a lot.
Sorry.
Okay. Well,
But I have one from Las Vegas that says, "Why lie? I need a whore."
Wow.
Wait a minute. That's offensive.
I'm just saying that the span of stuff that is on some of these signs is pretty amazing. And yet, I think the ones that still hit me the hardest are the serious ones. The ones that talk about a mother of three or somebody that says, "Hey, I'm embarrassed to be standing out here, but I don't know what else to do." Those signs are the ones that I think still hit me the hardest. Even though I enjoy the humorous signs and so forth, but I really resonate with some of the signs that I see.
Yeah, it's I can imagine it's very humbling. Based upon what you just said, it's very, very humbling. I want to know, like, what gave you this idea? What made you think? What made you stop and do it just one day?
I don't know. Where do ideas come from, man? If you could tell me that, then we would all be further along. I don't know. It just occurred, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do it.
I recommend the book, Richard Box 1. We'll talk about the ideal fairy.
Oh. Okay. That could be it. It could have been a muse or some sort of little inspiration that fell down into my head. I don't know. But it occurred to me, and I did it.
I've been looking at some of the articles that are going on, because right now there are some articles about you. And one of the things that I read was there was a point where seeing homeless people asking for money made you want to avert your eyes, look a different way at one point in time. What's changed?
Well, that was in the beginning. Back in 93, when I first started to see people on the corners, I believe that was my default. And once I started buying the signs, that's what changed everything. It was like from that point forward, whatever fear I might have had about talking to them went away, and any discomfort went away, and it became very, and right now, I mean, I have absolutely no hesitation when I pull up.
My question also, because I mean, I was actually discussing this with somebody, and my question is, like, also in the middle, at the end of the quote that I just gave you was that it's almost like the people you want to avert your eyes from, they found a loophole in society.
Tell me what you mean by that loophole in society.
Loophole in society is like in a societal, how does it state? In a social contract. Meaning like there's a social etiquette that we all uphold ourselves to, which is why there is a barrier of homelessness. And they found the loophole in that social contract in asking other individuals for money. Me and my wife were talking about this, and we asked a question to each other, because I am homeless. I can ask this question, or was. Thanks, Jesus. Is he trying to prove a point by buying a sign? Is it more like a you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day type of move? You teach a man to fish, you'll feed him for life? Is it one of those type of deals? Like, was there an underlying point you were trying to make to the homeless individual as you bought the sign from them?
Not that I'm aware of at all. I think this was much more for me than it was for them. they generally, as you might guess, were pretty happy to sell the sign, and sometimes were really happy just to have a conversation with somebody, because I found, and so I don't know if you know this too, but this past July, I went across the country from Seattle to New York, buying signs for 31 days, 24 cities. And it was a big project that we're making a documentary about this right now. I got to talk to a lot of those folks for a really long period of time, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever. And in some of those conversations, people would tell me straight up, they would much rather someone talk to them and acknowledge them than they would give them a dollar, that they really wanted that connection with another human being. That totally makes sense to me.
You know what? I think it makes sense to all of us, man. That with emotions like loneliness, like with emotions like just repressed emotions, period, you deal with that. We once had a guy on named Larry James, and he would talk about the impact of just a pat on the back, what it actually meant to individuals, and how important it was. Man, I'm interested to hear more about Willie Baronet. Y'all stay tuned. So back on the fourth episode of the Street View podcast, today in the studio, we also have Mr. Charles William. Mr. William, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Man, I'm so proud of people who are up at the Stew Pot. The Stew Pot has a wealth of unimaginable proportions. What you tell us a little about yourself?
Well, first of all, I have to say thank you, Rashad, for having me here. Willie, I really admire what you do. I mean, I forgot what her name was over there taking a picture of Sherry. She showed me some pictures, and I think it's amazing, you know, because, I mean, really, in those signs, there's a lot of their energy in there. And that's what I see you doing, is collecting all that energy and putting it together and create one big piece, and all that energy just flows. And that helps you, and it helps, you know, people come and see that. And that's all that energy is God talking right there. So I really admire that.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about you, Joe.
Well, I've been homeless on and off about 10 years now. I'm 40. I was born in Riverside, California. I came to Texas when I was probably 12. So I'm pretty much California made and Texas raised. That's about the gist of it.
What about the Stew Pot Art Program?
Stew Pot Art Program is a great program. When I first became homeless on the street, it was my mother's birthday, and I wanted to make her something, but I didn't have the supplies to do so. So I came across this girl named Pocahontas, and she was crocheting. And I was like, oh yeah, my mom likes crochet. I know how to crochet. I said, where can I find that? She goes, oh, just go upstairs. So I went upstairs, and I was there ever since. Just a testimony. Always listen to your grandmother, because my grandmother as a child said, you're supposed to be an artist. And I denied that, and that's not what I wanted to do. She said, you know, you're supposed to be an artist. And so as, you know, went in those young adult years, went and got lost, you know, becoming lost. And you just, you know, I was lost, and now I've been found. So grandmother's right.
So you enjoy art.
I enjoy all art. I enjoy the music. I enjoy, you know, the theater. You know, everything's a part of art. And for me, you know, our higher power, our Lord, is an art. You know, he's an artist. And so we strive to be like him or her. But that's how I see it, through art.
How long have you been dealing with the homeless processes? I mean, like, I've known you from UGM.
Right.
I've also known you at the Bridge.
Right.
How long have you been dealing with that process? Tell the people a little bit about the culture of the homeless.
it's really difficult. Like for the UGM, which is a shelter, it's a good place if you need somewhere to go. I never stayed at the Bridge. I mean, feel as though as I've been, you know, the UGM for like 5 or 10 years, but you know, when I got all the paperwork and added it all up, it was like 3 years the max. And so I come and I go, I'll have an apartment, I'll lose an apartment, have an apartment, lose an apartment. It's just really hard to try to stay focused if your calling life is just to be an artist. You know, it's hard to stay focused and have a full-time job and be an artist at the same time.
I understand that monetary value on an artist, artiste is very, very difficult.
Right.
So all together, about how many pieces have you done over there at Stew Pot?
Someone asked me that same question.
Not too long ago?
Not too long ago, yeah. Someone asked that same question. It Hundreds. Yeah, I had to say hundreds. Yeah.
I didn't really get into this earlier, but Mr. Willie is he's an artist. He's been advertising, and he's been doing artwork, or should I say, galleries in Deep Ellum. And so, is there anything you want to like talk to Mr. Willie about, like really, really ask him about?
I really think you should come up to the Stew Pot, because I know the Bridge has a program on Wednesdays. I forgot the guy's name. Denny. Yes, Denny. They have a program on Wednesdays, and I think Denny would be good, you know, good for you. I mean, the Stew Pot, we have a wide range, but I think what Denny does, I think y'all have a perfect match right there for some reason.
I don't want to freak you out, but I saw Denny last night, and we were talking about this. I've known him off and on for a while. And when I was in grad school, part of my research when I was starting to do work around this, I went to the Stew Pot. Right. I actually shot some video of some of the artists working during the day. I bought a few paintings from the Stew Pot, and I'm a big fan of that program.
It's a growing program, and it's amazing. We have the 508 Park building coming up, which I'm sure you're aware of.
I've heard about it, yeah.
So it's going to be like the art gallery, a bigger art studio, a homeless museum, amphitheater, music. I mean, all that stuff is going to be there.
Community garden. All kinds of stuff is going to be there.
Everything's going to be there. So everybody has some type of gift within them. So everybody should just come up there and find where they're supposed to be in life, or find themselves, pretty much.
I think it'll be an invigorating thing, because what happens is individuals from every single culture mm-hmm. will smash together and begin to use their talents yes. and their time. Won't you guys, I'd like for you guys to talk about interventionist art.
Interventionist art?
Interventionist art. I'd like for you to ask him what that is.
Willie, what is interventionist? What is it?
Interventionist.
Interventionist art.
Art that is supposed to disrupt daily living in some way. I took a class, you know, when I was in grad school. It was taught by Greg Metz, who was a mentor of mine in grad school. And the class was about, he wanted us to come up with a way, to come up with a project to disrupt daily life. So immediately I started thinking about homeless signs, because I can't help myself. And what I ended up doing, and I did three of these, I would get 30 or 40 of my friends, whoever would volunteer, and we would go at Central and Mockingbird and all stand out on the street holding homeless signs.
You know, you get a ticket for that, right?
You know, what's funny is I got a detective on speed dial on my phone who heads up all of those kinds of events. And so he would come and sort of be our chaperone. He would tell us what we can do, what we can't do. And the police came every single time, of course. And they did make us, in some cases, move to a different area. The third time we did it, we took a bunch of $1 bills and we wrote the URL to our website on these $1 bills, weareallhomeless.org. And so we were handing those out to the cars. And the police made us stop doing that, because apparently you can't be handing out money on the street.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what. Even without the writing, apparently you're not supposed to be handing out dollar bills off the side of the street. But that's what, flash mobs, you know, anything that happens out in public that disrupts the normal routine of daily life is what is considered to be interventionist art. And it's about disruption.
So is that going to be like, are those events going to be on the documentary?
There's a chance that we might show footage of some of those events as part of talking about the history of the project. It's possible.
So you have more free range when you're like outside of Dallas or in other states. Because I know Dallas is so conservative. Like, you can go to New York or somewhere and just tie yourself and jump off something and make fun. And everybody would get it. But here it was just, it's hard to happen.
I agree. I do think there are different sorts of, you know, you talked about energy a little while ago, and there are cities that have a different kind of energy around the issue of homelessness. Right. When we were traveling across the country this summer, one of the things we noticed was the cities like Seattle, San Francisco, LA, Denver, some of the ones that were, and New York, the ones that were a little more friendly and compassionate toward the homeless, the signs tended to be more creative and bigger, and even the people seemed to be a little bit more confident. And then in other cities, the ones that were a little more conservative, where homelessness was maybe not, people were a little bit stricter about it, the signs tended to be smaller and more serious, and the people more afraid because the cops could give them a ticket at any moment.
Haven or Austin?
Many times. Yeah. It's a great place to buy signs, by the
right,
way.
I believe it. I believe it.
I love Austin.
Yeah. You guys are wondering Austin about getting in the sign buying business. I mean, go to Austin. No.
Well, I'm really interested in what you just said about the different cities and them being more accepting of the homeless and the attitudes of the homeless, that they have greater confidence. Do you think that they play a more important role in the society in those cities? Are they more accepted? Are they more of the fabric of the city, whereas in the other cities, they are not a part of anything whatsoever?
Generally speaking, yes. I think that a lot of the things you said are exactly the case. Part of it's about policy and laws that are written to try to hide the homeless or somehow get them out of the public vision, and which we all know is not possible, first of all, and in some cases it doesn't really address any of the real problems. And so I think the cities that tend to be a little more relaxed about that and more accepting of the homeless, and like you said, accepting of the fact that's a part of the fabric of any culture, that it was reflected in the way that people held themselves, and in my case, I noticed it in the signs.
You said in Detroit, there were no lighthearted messages.
No, Detroit was an amazing city for a lot of reasons. I could have stayed there and just, looked at the graffiti and the street art, and the way that city looks is just fascinating. But yeah, the people were generally pretty serious, and they seemed to be in pretty dire straits, and the signs reflected that. I didn't see a single humorous sign while we were in Detroit.
So let me ask you this. What are some of the benefits you've learned or you've gained from listening to other people's stories? Like, say you and I, we meet, I have a sign, you buy my sign, yet we have this conversation. In this conversation, have you benefited from it?
Totally.
And what are some of the benefits from that, outside of just being humble?
There's so many. One, and I've said this before, is that on a daily basis, it reinforces how much I have to be grateful for. That I do have a place to sleep. I have a shower whenever I want a shower. I've got food. I've got health care. All the things that I take for granted. It's a daily reminder of how important those things are. It's a daily reminder that I've got a safety net. I got friends and family that even if something horrible happened and I was on the street, I got people where I could go sleep. And I know that. And so I got to talk to people who didn't have that safety net. Maybe their family's deceased or they've got a bad relationship, with their family. And so they didn't have that safety net. So that was one of the things I took away. And the other thing is just the connection, the human connection. I mean, I have a conversation with anybody at a real level. That's a gift. It's part of what lets me know as a human being I'm not alone on this planet. That, man, I'm struggling with the same stuff everybody's struggling with, the same fears, the same existential questions, whatever that might be.
Interpersonal relationship skills. Charles, what do you think about those?
I tend to say to myself a lot, for me, relationships and the homelessness, like toward the bridge and around here, I pretty much stay away from it because to me, it's mostly kids who are just lost and they're not focused. They still don't know where to go yet. And so I tend to have more relationship with the people who actually do sleep under the bridge, who are out in the outskirts, who are actually hungry and don't want to come down to the bridge or to the library or any of these places, because it's the people who are younger are hateful and are mean to them, and they can't get the things that they need. So I tend to have the relationship with those people out there.
I'm looking at trying to promote some things real quick. I want you guys to kind of give a shout out about where we can either get your art or if you want to be reached, where you could be reached.
I could be reached at the Stew Pot. thesteeppot.org,
I believe.
Thesteeppot.org. The Steeppot, we also have a show coming up in December here at the Dallas Public Library from January to the end of December to the end of January.
On the fourth floor.
On the fourth floor. Yeah. In the Bradshaw Gallery. Yes.
Yeah. And what about you, Mr. Willie?
Well, before I talk about this project, I also want to echo, I mean, we've been talking about the Stew Pot and what a wonderful program that is. I know a lot of the beautiful people at the Bridge, and they do great work. The Housing Crisis Center is another one that I have friends who are there, and I just want to say how important all of those resources are in the city. I know there are a lot more, too, but I'm a big fan of the work that gets done at all of those places. If anybody wants to find out more about this project, you can Google We Are All Homeless, or you can go to weareallhomeless.org. That's an easy place to sort of find the main blog that has a lot about this project. If you're on Facebook, We Are All Homeless, again, there is a page and a group. And you can also Google me and contact me. I'm pretty easy to reach at willie@williebaronet.com.
You guys stay tuned. We're coming right back. Back on with the Street View Podcast with Willie Baronet and Charles William. I want to talk to you, Mr. Willie. I want to talk to you about the project that you have going. Could you give me a little info about that?
We, as I mentioned, we recently in July 1st through 31st, traveled across the country, Seattle down to San Diego, ending in New York City, buying signs in 24 different cities. And we had I had three other people with me on that trip in two cars, all for the purpose of shooting a documentary, which is going to be a feature-length documentary. The working title is Signs of Humanity. And in addition to that, we're putting together a book. We are continuing to do other art installations. We're trying to line one up for January right now, hopefully in New York, so keep your fingers crossed. And as many possible installations as we can do over the course of, 2015 and 2016, as much as we can do, we're going to do it.
What about you? What's your background? Where'd you come from?
I am the oldest of eight from a big Cajun family in Lafayette, Louisiana.
That's my hood.
No. Yeah. Best food on the planet. And, I was born and raised there, went to high school and college in Lafayette, and have been in Dallas now for 30 years, which is kind of amazing to me. And so Dallas is home number two.
Did you know as a child that you wanted to work with the visual arts?
I grew up drawing. So for me, as long as I can remember, I was drawing and I would copy cartoons and, do lettering as a little kid. But I came from a family, I don't think that, art was something that anybody in the family did that was so I never thought about it as a career until I was already in college, and I changed my major a couple of times and finally settled on advertising design. And I knew when I was there that was the right place.
Advertising and design. So where's your where's the gallery? Do you have one, like your own gallery?
I do not have a gallery. I have a studio in Oak Cliff.
Okay.
And have done.
That's your hood. I see.
have done exhibits in various places in Dallas, at the Howe Samples Gallery in Deep Ellum, at the Mac, at a couple other places here, and right now don't have any stuff on display anywhere. But like I said, we're working on something for January, primarily to be about the signs that we bought on the trip.
So on this documentary that you have, are there going to be like personal narratives?
For sure. We interviewed about 150 people over the course of July. And so we've got many, many dozens of hours of just interviews. I asked every single one of them the question, what does home mean to you? And that has become a bit of a theme for this documentary. And I realized that I'm trying to figure out the answer to that for myself. So, in fact, Rashad, what does home mean to you?
Home means to me peace and love. Peace, where there is peace and where there is love, I am at home. That's why I fit where I go.
That's why being in a actual, like a domicile doesn't really, really affect me in too much of a straight, you know, it wasn't my first thought. My first priority is not, oh, I need a place. I need a place to stay. No, it's not. My first priority is, oh man, I need love and I need peace. And if I can have the both of those things, then I'm at home.
Charles, what about you?
It's funny you asked that, because back when I was getting my GED back in 97, and the topic for the essay was, name a lesson that you've learned but not from a book. And my lesson was not to abuse drugs or anything. And basically, it was about keeping a roof over my head. And then I was like, there must be some type of monster or witch out there. I said, because now I'm homeless. It's like I have to prove a point now. And home to me is a place where I am at peace, a place where I can be comfortable, a place where I could be who I am. Home is just a place for a peace where I can be peaceful at. That's what home is for me. I mean, I know right here on Earth, I'm not at home. I mean, Earth isn't home, but as for four walls, it's not really necessary, you know, but...
Thank you, man. Yeah, so that was a central question, you know, for my interviews with a lot of the people that I bought signs from. And I got to hear so many amazing stories. So.
I got a question for Ann. Hey, Ann. Hey. Did you have to put on your voice? I know you're really, really interested in Mr. Baronet. I was wondering if you could ask him about some things. Anything.
Some things.
Anything. Like, I mean, I have
a list
of...
I'm frightened.
I know you have questions prepared.
What other ways, other than the summer project, the documentary, what other ways do you think we can work a greater awareness of homelessness into the fabric of the community, which I was talking about earlier? What else can we do to make it a part of who we are here in Dallas, that we are aware of people and their situations and have the humanity and humility to be there for people?
I think exactly, you know, the purpose behind all of this idea about trying to raise awareness and compassion, I think that's an ongoing thing that has to happen in any way we can. Part of it might be like downstairs, you guys were doing the spoken word performances, and some of those pieces were around the theme of homelessness. I think art exhibits by the homeless. I think anything that helps people to see that we're all the same, that's really what's at the basis of this. And for me, this whole project about the signs, the documentary, the book, the exhibits, all of that, for me, it's all incrementally doing that thing, which is to get people to just stop for a second and not make the judgments that are so easy to make about somebody on the street. I mean, I still do it. I've been doing this 21 years and I still make judgments up without meaning to, but it just happens.
I'm a little curious, what has been one of the, and I'm not sure if Rashad asked this already, what's been one of the most memorable responses that you have had from someone when you approach them and ask them to buy a sign? We talked about memorable signs,
right?
But what about responses?
There was one, and this is probably going back 15 years, a really, really thin woman on the streets of Dallas. When I asked to buy her sign, she said yes, and then she started crying. And I said, is everything okay? She said, yes, my husband made this sign, and he died. And she flipped the sign over and showed me his name written on the back. And I said, are you sure you want to sell it? And she said, oh, yeah, I really do. I think he would love for his sign to be part of an art project. And I'd never had that kind of reaction before. You know, sometimes it's really more about the personality of the person, that there have been people who just want to talk and talk, and they will literally keep a conversation going even while cars are blowing their horns behind me. So there's so many of those. There were some on this trip over the summer. I met a woman in Detroit named Cheryl, who the only person ever to reach inside my car and hug my neck after I bought her sign. She was so excited. And she was also a person who was very effusive. She was just screaming and hollering. And I drove around the block and came back and to talk to her again. And we ended up coming back the next day with the documentary guys and doing an interview with her. But it was more her enthusiasm. The entire time she and I did the interview, she held my hand. I could tell how hungry she was for human touch. And, you know, she's one of those people that I'll never forget. So, I mean, sometimes it's the person, sometimes it's the connection I feel. You know, I think I may have talked about this guy, Michael in Omaha, who I talked to him for a while. He was missing a leg. So I had a friend who passed away last year who only had one leg. So I immediately was thinking about her. He was an ex-Navy guy. I have a little brother who's in the Navy. So I was thinking about my brother. And I had another friend of mine who committed suicide 3 years ago who was a Vietnam vet. And so I was thinking about him. And it was like all of these personal connections I had with this one man who was gentle and generous and kind and wise. And we had this beautiful conversation. And I know I'll never forget him, ever. In fact, he's one of the few guys I took a selfie with, you know, which I didn't do hardly at all on this trip, but I asked him if I could take a picture with him, and he said, sure, and he pulled me close, and it was just one of those interviews I'll never forget. I cried in a Burger King parking lot after talking to him. The documentary crew, by the way, their job is to make me cry, I've discovered. And so we're in the parking lot of this Burger King, and they were saying, so tell me about your interview with Michael. And I just lost it. Mm-hmm. And it was, I connected with him. He's probably about my age, too. Mm-hmm. There was a lot that just felt, I just felt a powerful connection to him.
Well, your stories are certainly very powerful, and I hope that we can get Dallas to listen to these stories. And also the nation, I know you've gotten a lot of media coverage over the summer.
That's been insane, by the way. I was not prepared for that. No one has given me media coaching or anything. And beginning in Seattle, there was a publication called Real Change, did an interview like the day one. And I did not expect it, but it almost happened in every city that we were in. Mm-hmm. And culminating in Washington, D.C., I got to do an interview on All Things Considered, which is for me like a dream, you know. It was like, wow. And so, yeah, it was just hard to take all of that in while we're driving across the country and while we are having all of these amazing conversations, you know, with the people on the streets.
Well, I think it's very fortuitous that it did happen, because it is getting that message out that we're trying to get out. And I have loved listening to you and Charles speak about art from different viewpoints, different sides of homelessness. And this has been a very interesting conversation.
As an individual who is also perpetuating an art program, how do you feel about it as far as artist-wise, an artivist? How do you feel about being an artivist? Would you coin yourself to be one of those?
I am passionate about art. I'm not an artivist. But I have a passion. And I think that comes through in what I do every day as a librarian. You know, with the programs that we do here at the library, in the way I express myself. I also enjoy writing. I don't do very much of it. And it is so much a part of who I am. I'm no longer a true artist. I'm more of a collector now. And I like to have, you're speaking about, you know, what home is. And I am a creature of some type of comfort, and I want my dogs and my husband with me, but I want things that mean a lot to me around me. And we have a lot of art in our house, and art means a lot. It expresses who we are, what we feel, and is just a wonderful adds a wonderful beauty to our lives. So that is something that's very important to me in my home, is art.
As once told to me by my humanities teacher, art is the thermometer of a culture, in a sense. It pretty much is like what's going on in that time frame and in that place is reflected in the art. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be an artist, even with words. I want to kind of thank everybody for coming to the show. Willie, Mr. Willie, I appreciate you coming out. It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Rashad, thank you for having me, man. It's been good to get to know you, and I enjoyed hearing your spoken word downstairs.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I want to shout out Mr. Charles. Mr. Charles had to leave a little early. I want to shout him out. Also want to shout out Miss Cynthia over at the Stew Pot art program, as well as Denny over at this at the Bridge in their art program. Always great to have beautiful, beautiful people in the studio. Thank you, Miss Stone. Also, thank you. I can't see you, Kara. Thank you, Miss Kara. Captain, I appreciate it. One of the last things I want to talk about before I go is the fact of individuals who are strangers coming together and fighting a common goal and a common cause. I can look at each and every one of you guys, and you probably, none of you guys really, really know me. Like, from Lil Rashad all the way up until, you know, the knucklehead who comes on the mic, whichever mic it is, and spits. Thank you. Thank you guys for working with me, because sometimes I can be arrogant and self-centered and foolish. I can exhibit qualities and characteristics that are not desirable or desirable to be around. We all can. And I think that's what we're fighting for, because we try to associate negative characteristics and qualities towards individuals who are homeless. When in all actuality, just like you said, Mr. Willie, some of them are just really, really caring and considerate and sweet. And they just want to be, they just want to share that and show that with other individuals. So I thank you guys for allowing me to work in that capacity as a moderator. So with that said, man, I want to go ahead on and close this thing out in prayer, if y'all don't mind. Let us pray. Whoever's up there, Most High God, we call you Most High God. We call you, you know, Almighty. You up there looking down. Whatever going on, if you with us or not, man, just thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to breathe every single second. And while we doing this breathing, thank you for invoking in us emotions, strong emotions that bring a desire. And that desire is not for self-centered reasons, God, but the desire that we have is for a common goal. And that common goal is love and peace, so that we all might evoke a home for each other. Thank you. It's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. Thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned in to the next Street View podcast.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.